You get so caught up in restoring the galaxy to its rightful state that you miss what's going on behind the scenes. I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the B-Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Counter, and as I promised, it's Christmas week, and what would Christmas week be without some fucking presents? And so we're gifting you guys, yes, we're gifting you guys all of the Star Wars. We're ranking them, all of the Star Wars. So last Standing Room Only, we looked at the first... the first section or the first part of Star Wars content that we ranked from 17 to 9, ending with The Force Awakens. And so now we're at the top 8. So 8 to 1, we've got to go through. And I think that you're going to be generally surprised, possibly, with my choices in the rankings. Again, you're welcome to get mad at me, but, you know, these are just my opinions and how and where I feel the strength of the series lands. So without further ado, let's get it right into it and get into number 8. Now, mind you, at this point, all of this stuff is all love. Like, I think The Force Awakens is the last thing that I really had a big problem with. The rest of it is just all kind of gravy, shall we say. So with that, number 8, Genndy Tartakovsky's Star Wars The Clone Wars, which was approximately 25 episodes, broken into anywhere between 5 to 15 minute episodes that were animated in the Genndy Tartakovsky style, which for me works like fucking gangbusters. What is it? Like everything from Dexter to Powderpuff Girls to my personal favorite, Samurai Jack. It just all works for me. And like, I think that we all know that the reason why he got this particular job was because of the fact that he was like Samurai Jack, like, was something that Lucas had saw and really kind of fell in love with and decided to, he always wanted to venture out into animation from what I understood. I mean, that's why he had Pixar at Lucasfilm for so long and decided to test it out with this time between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. They bridge the gap between, like, this animated series bridges the gap between that. And there's something else that's later on in the list that also does the same thing, but from a different perspective, and we'll look at that, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But there was a lot of story to be told that he said that there was a lot of story to be told, and he wanted to bridge that gap, because we're not seeing the war, which I think is ultimately probably my biggest issue and where the prequels fail is, and I'm not trying to dog on the prequels. I mean, I have a lot of affection and love for the prequels. So when I say that the problems, I'm talking about a genuine problem and a critique. It's not just to bash Lucas or bash the series as a whole. No, it's genuinely because I feel like this is the issue, which is that you call something Star Wars, but you don't have the war that you're talking about in there. I mean, with the original trilogy, Star Wars, the war was there. It was to be had. It was to be watched, and it played out. Where, like, the Clone Wars, we never saw, except for if you were willing to deep dive. And that's where I was willing to deep dive, and I love Star Wars and all of its content that I wanted to see it. So it works. Like the okay, so the first it's two seasons. The first season is completely silent. Like there's no actors talking. And then the second season, there's actual dialogue. Like people actually voice characters. Like before in the first ones, they're like these 5-minute short films that are wordless and just see things that happen. And what I love about this is that it shows Jedi at their most powerful. Like there's one episode where Anakin takes down an entire fucking Star Destroyer or a Trade Federation ship, an entire Trade Federation ship. How fucking amazing is that? Like, that's the kind of shit that you get to see in this. And it's full of style. It's full of humor. And it's everything that I love about Star Wars all packed up into this small, compact package. You can take them and leave them. They're on DVD, which is where I would say go ahead and search them out. I'm pretty sure that they are actually out of print. So you're going to have to do a little bit of diving, a little bit of deep diving to find them. But they're so worth it. Because if you like Samurai Jack, you're going to fucking love this. This is so great. And for people, like, you know, there is a lot of voice actor connectivity and a character connectivity between this and another property that we're going to be talking about a little bit later. And we'll get into that in a moment, but it's really awesome. And I really suggest you guys take a look for this. I think that maybe online there may be somebody who had craftily strung them all together and made an HD version of like a mega movie. Which would probably be about 2.5 hours long, which you're gonna have to search for it. That's all I'm gonna say. But yeah, number eight, Tarkovsky's Clone Wars, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I always am really bad with names, so if I am mispronouncing Gendy's name, please let me know and I will apologize profusely. So that gets us to the number seven slot, which is Return of the Jedi. The closing of the original Star Wars trilogy, which I really like. As endings to trilogies go, a lot of times, 9 times out of 10, they just don't succeed. They fall flat. We've seen it before. But I think the Jedi really does, it does hit all the marks it needs to. And in a lot of ways, it perfectly mirrors A New Hope. And not in an annoying way, not in a I'm out of storytelling ideas, more of in like a what Lucas has always said, which is that these are tone poems that have matching stanzas. And it's very much so that kind of thing of matching stanzas within Return of the Jedi and A New Hope. And I really like that. And I love Ewoks. I don't give a fuck what you guys say. You guys can talk all the shit you want about Ewoks, but I fucking love them. I fucking love those little fucking bastards that took on the fucking Empire and fucking destroyed them and then ate them like fucking cannibals. You cannot tell me that the fucking Ewoks are not fucking gangsters. They are fucking straight up gangsters. They didn't just fucking kill those motherfuckers. They killed them and then they had them for barbecue. And then they used their heads as drums with the Yub Nub song. And yes, I'm all about the fucking Yub Nub song. Okay. I don't give a fuck. I really don't honestly give a fuck. Yub Nub song, all the way. I don't want this newfangled whatever fucking thing it was. The Yub Nub song, please. Yes, it works, okay? It works. It's a great fucking thing. And you guys taking it out, oh, it makes me so... That's the only change that I really detest. Like, to be honest with you, like, everything else in the special editions, I really don't care. Like, it... Like, to be honest with you, I really don't care. Like, Han shot first. I don't care. It doesn't ruin the films. But what I do care about, fucking Yub Nub song. Fucking Yub Nub song. I mean, seriously, guys. They've erased a piece of beautiful history from the Star Wars trilogy with that. So, yeah. But... ultimately, what I love about this film is that it is the happy ending that you want. It's the it's the good guys win, and the redemption of Darth Vader coming back to help his son. I mean, I think that, like, if we're talking about moments, that moment is probably one of the most powerful moments, if not the most powerful moment in like the lexicon of Star Wars, is that moment where Luke is reaching out to his father and just saying, "Father, please." And Vader, like, going against his programming and saving his son. For anybody that has had a strained relationship with their father, I mean, can understand these moments. Like, and it's a very personal moment, and like, to see this in a huge trilogy and it be sincere and mean it. It's powerful, heady stuff. I really do like, I love everything in Jedi. I love how big and ballsy it is. I love how messy it is. Like I said, I love the Ewoks. I love the stupidity of the Luke and or the Han and Leia, like, romance, not romance. It's just it's great. And then of course you've got the best part, like, you know, you got the Lando of it all, which is great. And you've got Mark Hamill selling the shit out of this movie, like there is nobody's business. Number 7, Return of the Jedi. Now, number 6, Star Wars, The Last Jedi. I'm going to keep my comments brief. I'm not going to spoil anything for you guys because it's a brand new movie and it deserves not to be spoiled. I will say this, though. So, the reason why people are probably like, "Well, it's the best fucking Star Wars." Slow your roll. Calm down, you nerf herders. And listen, I've only seen it once. I can't make a fair judgment. I can't put it at the top. I couldn't justify putting something at the top of my fucking list that I've only seen once. Are you fucking kidding me? Anybody who does that, like these people that are willy-nilly like ranking it and putting it higher than other things that they've lived with for a long time, it doesn't work like that. I can tell you, like, I mean, it should tell you just by me ranking it number 6 at this point after only one viewing how strong of a movie it is. And it is. Rian Johnson delivers a Star Wars movie that is unlike any other Star Wars movie. Like, this movie, it's like A New Hope is something original because it's the original. Empire takes Star Wars and turns it into something different. And that is the last time we've had a different Star Wars movie. Think about that. 37 fucking years. We've had, like, as soon as Return of the Jedi came out and it matched, it rhymed in a way to Star Wars, matching its structure, its style, its je ne sais quoi, if you will. Since that moment, Empire, in the way that it was, it changed the structure and made it more of a character-based adventure film. We had not, like in the way that it changed up the structure to be more emotionally structured than it was like plot structured. Since then, we have not gotten a differently structured Star Wars film, something that bucks the convention. The Last Jedi, honestly, it does. It is, like, it's not too far away. So, like, the hype machine about, "Oh, yeah, it's a completely different Star Wars movie." No, don't believe them, okay? It's set up in a way that is, like, a Star Wars-esque structure, but how they do it and the components that they use to create this story is really interesting. Now, it's not a perfect film. I have a few issues with it. There's some very big issues that I have. Like, there's two very big issues with it. I'm going to have to see it again to confirm. I'm not going to say it on this podcast what those issues are, just because they might have been just affectations or vomits in my mouth, if you will, in my head, as I was watching this film. But I will say, It is beautifully photographed, amazingly built structure-wise, through set pieces, and it emotionally connects in a way that I don't think the Star Wars film has since Return of the Jedi. Mind you, think about that when I say that. Star Wars film. Okay? But with that being said, number six, Star Wars The Last Jedi. I'll probably talk at a later time a little bit more about my issues with the film. No film is perfect or created in a vacuum. I think that, like, as I'm recording this right now, about a week before Christmas, what I've noticed is, like, you know, we're four-ish days into the release of The Last Jedi, and people are so fucking yes, no, binary about this fucking movie. I mean, seriously, guys, a movie doesn't have to be fantastic, end of days, amazing, and it also doesn't have to be the worst piece of shit in the world. Like, this is where I don't get the binariness of everything nowadays. Last Jedi falls somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, more towards the greatness. Like, it really does. And to me, like, expecting a movie to be either Kubrick or Ed Wood, I just don't get it. It really saddens me that people, like, are like that now, and that people can't, you know, I know that you guys are not like that, because, I mean, you guys are, like, into B-movies, so, like, you know, you taking this strange trip with me into B-Movielandia, you realize, like, you know, there's an agreement that maybe things aren't going to be perfect, but what you're going to get is so much more of an experience. And I think that that's what The Last Jedi offered me for the first time in a very long time in a Star Wars film. It threw me off of my game. It made me question things. It made me, the anxiety rose in me for the first time in a Star Wars movie ever, like, since Return of the Jedi. Like, since then, there's been no, like, there's no tension, there's no, like, unpredictability, but Rian Johnson and Lucasfilm as a whole with The Last Jedi brought that back in a way that I find wonderful. Like, bringing that thrilling aspect back to Star Wars, where I didn't know what could happen at any moment, that there are some really amazingly structured and big time payoffs that they do in this film that I was not expecting, that just, and they don't deserve to be ruined. So I'm not going to even talk about them. And I'm not going to even say spoiler warning and then going into spoilers. And that's special to me. And I think that that's more than anything, The Last Jedi stands as an experiential thing for me right now. And as an experience, it's amazing, and I'm well happy and well worth. I'm happy that I got to see it in the way that I did with the people that I did, at the time that I did. And as a film, I need to see it a few more times. But my initial thoughts are, it's a hell of a Star Wars movie because of the fact that it changes up its structure. And, you know, people's critiques of there's too much story in 2.5 hours. Go find something fucking else to complain about, because, you know, I think there's an overabundance of story. It's really packed, but I think that that's part of the reason why it works. There's a lot to be said about this film, but I need to see it a few more times and kind of get into its rhythm and understand how it works and kind of take a look at it behind the curtains. And I'm not going to be able to do that within the first, you know, couple of viewings or even the first 6 months of knowing this film until I really have had a time to dig into it and really feel out what it means to me and where it lands. So with that, just remember that this is, you know, this is number six. Number five. So, number five is Rogue One. That's right. I'm going to get a lot of shit for this, but this is the third best Star Wars movie that isn't third Star Wars movie. Like, it's the third best Star Wars movie, but the fifth best thing in content. So, and the reason why is the same reason why The Last Jedi is where it's ranked. It's because it takes what we know as a Star Wars and expands on that beyond what we normally associate with Star Wars. I know that a lot of people are down on this movie, and they have been for, like, you know, steadily going through, and some people even calling it not a Star Wars movie. And like, you know what? They can say whatever the fuck they want, but to me, it's a great Star Wars movie because of the fact that it's different. They took a story convention. They basically made a prequel again. But I think that what I love about it is that, A, there's no Jedi within this story. And B, and it's something odd that I couldn't put my finger on, but when me and my girlfriend were talking about the movies and where they ranked and stuff, and just talking about The Last Jedi, Rogue One came up, and Rogue One is her favorite of the Star Wars films. And why she loved it so much, and this is something that I love too, is that it tells a complete story. It, like, A, B, and C. It doesn't leave anything unresolved. Like, you can watch the film and say, this is a whole film. I mean, it's, you know, rebels rebels understand that there's a new weapon. They have to steal the plans for the weapon. They go on men and women on a mission film to get those plans. And it ends as all men on a mission film end. It's great structure. It's a great movie. I really love everything that they do with it. And I love I love the characters. Everybody in the film has their own moment, is their own unique person. And I love that. From Jyn to Krennic to, Chirrut and Baze. Everybody in this film is, they feel fully realized and lived in. That's what I love about Rogue One, is that it's a lived-in movie, much in the same way that A New Hope is a lived-in film and a lived-in universe, and I really like that. So, yeah, number five, Rogue One. Now, number four. So number four is the thing that kept my Star Wars fandom alive. It's the thing that made me realize that that not was all was lost, because, and it was something I came to late. It was around, number four is the Clone Wars animated series, created and mostly directed by Dave Filoni, who will also come up again on this list, as you can probably already guess. But a lot of the reason why it's number four is because like, it's an emotional thing for me. A lot of this stuff is emotional for me, but one of the big reasons why it's number four is because it kept my love of Star Wars alive during the darkest period of Star Wars. Before Disney bought them, before we knew that there were going to be new films, this is what we had. And I got to it at the tail end of Star Wars Clone Wars. I mean, we're talking like probably 2010. Was when I really kind of started, I went back and I started watching these and realizing how awesome they are and how awesome they were. And it didn't help. The thing is that what didn't help was I actually watched the Clone War movie, which now is basically considered a part of Star Wars, the Clone Wars. Like, it's, I mean, I'm not including that as a part of it, because I'm including it in the Clone Wars animated series. But that first movie is, it's troubling. And the first half a season of Star Wars Clone Wars, it's rocky. But if you can get past those eight to 10 episodes, it starts, and it's never bad. It's just, it's trying to find its way in its voice. But by the time like episode 8 or 9 hits, it starts finding its footing. And by the end of the season one, it definitely has found its footing and it's moving forward and it's cooking with gas. And it took a series, it was about 2012, I think, is when I actually got it. Because I got in around midway through the series, like around season four is when I actually really started to invest myself in it and actually go back and watch all of the series. What I love about it is it takes the prequels and it retroactively makes them better. Like, and I know that sounds crazy, but it does. Those who haven't seen the Clone Wars don't understand what that does. Like, it retroactively makes certain things about the Clone Wars better and more enjoyable. And there's a lot of story. There's 6 seasons of Clone Wars. Think about that. There are many people, like, I know people personally that I've tried to convert to the Clone Wars, and they're like, no, the movies. But I'm like, but there is literally, now there is literally hundreds, you literally have 100 hours of TV that you could watch that's Star Wars, that's structured like Star Wars, that's George Lucas Star Wars, and you could watch this and get so much out of it and so much enjoyment and love, and it will retroactively make the prequels better for you and more, I wouldn't say enjoyable, but at its worst, it'll make them tolerable for you and make you understand them. And this is the content that you wanted. You want to know about the Clone Wars. You guys were people are upset about the Attack of the Clones not being about the Clone Wars and then Revenge of the Sith not being about the Clone Wars. This is the Clone Wars. So you can have it. And there's so much great stuff to be taken from here. So much so that, it changes. Like, when you go through these, literally 100 hours of TV, it literally changes your views and character, like your liking of certain characters. Like, there are characters in here that I would consider some of the best characters in Star Wars, like some that surpass like the original trifecta. I mean so much so that it retroactively makes Obi-Wan Kenobi this amazingly awesome character that isn't as stiff as you think he is. In a lot of ways, this was the lighthouse for a lot of us. This is what kept us going and believing in Star Wars. And I really hope people will reapproach this because it's fucking good. It's not just good television. It's good Star Wars. And that's why it's at number 4, is that this is fucking good shit. This is like, I don't know why people aren't watching this. You guys are Star Wars obsessives. Get up on this. Don't just get on the movies. Don't bitch about the movies. Like, watch this. Enjoy this. Hell, even criticize it. Just come on, guys. Number 3 is, for me, Star Wars Rebels. I know that's a shock. And, come at me, guys. Go for it. I don't care, because this is my list. But if I really think about it, Star Wars Rebels is what reignited my obsession with Star Wars. I always loved Star Wars. And Star Wars Rebels, I don't think that a lot of people realize, but it's the first new content we got for Star Wars, in film or television. And those, the seasons, they're closing up, Star Wars Rebels is closing up on its 4th season. It's closing, or it's its fourth season is ending this in 2018. So we've only got about maybe, I think about another 8 episodes and then we're done. But this 3.5 seasons has been some of the best Star Wars storytelling that I've seen. Like, it takes Star Wars and does this, the exact thing that The Last Jedi does, which it takes the concept of Star Wars and what at their roots are the best things about Star Wars and transmutes them and to their own structure and their own needs and storytelling language. And it's not to say it's completely different, because it's not, but I feel like over these last 3.5 seasons, it's become quite clear to me that this is the Star Wars that I love, like, at its core. And I think, like, it should be no shock to anybody who's listened to me talk on my 2 different Star Wars podcasts that I've co-hosted with the editor-in-chief of Film Dispenser, Spencer Howard, that both Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels would be 3 and 4 on my list, because they're what I think of as the best of the possibility of what can Star Wars be without George Lucas. And I hope can be. And I think that is also shown in The Last Jedi, is like, this is what the best that Star Wars can be without George Lucas. So yeah, Star Wars Rebels, number 3. Number 2, The Empire Strikes Back. I know that a lot of people will put this as 1 just because that's what everybody thinks. It's like, you know, it's the best, and it's not the best. To me, it's not the best. I mean, we already know, you can already tell what the number 1 is going to be, but let's just talk about Empire for a minute, which I feel like its footprint on pop culture is enormous. As sequels go, it is the sequel. Like, I'm not 100% sure, because there are 2 sequels that footprint, their footprint on pop culture are indelible and basically write the mold for sequels, and they're neck and neck, and I can't tell you which one outweighs the other, which are The Empire Strikes Back and Godfather Part 2. But the strange thing is about both of them is that they share very, very much, so they are similar in a lot of respects, is that, you know, structurally they're kind of, they mirror each other in a weird way, where both of them are about, like, they're emotional sequels to their originals, in which I mean that it's the structure is told emotionally rather than through plot points. So with The Empire Strikes Back, it's charting Luke's ultimate emotional, like, you know, emotional realization at a certain peak. The same way as The Godfather emotionally is structured around Michael's, you know, emotional revelations and his downfall. And it's the same way with Luke. It's his emotional realizations and then his downfall. And both characters have hubris to spare and are both highly capable. But it's also, they're told from an emotional standpoint, which I find fascinating. Like, what I also find fascinating is, like, in 2017, a film that I feel like got no love, even though it was a huge hit, was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And what I loved so much about that movie is that few films take the correct lessons from Empire Strikes Back, which is that Empire, the biggest lesson that anybody can take from that film is not that it's a middle film, you can do whatever you want and leave with a cliffhanger, an emotional cliffhanger. That's the worst thing you can learn from that movie. The thing that you can learn from that movie is that Lawrence Kasdan working with in conjunction with George Lucas and Irving Kirshner created a story that is not based off of plot points, set pieces, but rather based off of emotions and charting a character's trajectory emotionally. And if you take a look at that, the way that Guardians of the Galaxy is structured is very similar. It's structured emotionally. And not just with Luke's character, but like in Empire, it's also charting the emotions of Han and Leia. Now, mind you, my thought processes on that love story have changed greatly in the last, 37 years that the movie has been, the movie's been around. And sorry about that. But it's a film like that. That is not a love story. That is just a back and forth banter that ends with instead of a hate fuck or like an angry fuck, it ends with an angry kiss. Like these two people are so just at each other's throats that eventually, it's like those two people that hate one another that that are eventually going to sleep with one another. You know, it's the moonlighting effect. It's the Cheers effect. It's like, or any kind of, screwball comedy where you pit two people opposites attract, sparks fly, yada, yada, yada. But that's still it's still tracking emotionally with them. I love that about Empire, and that's because it's so completely different than A New Hope. A New Hope doesn't do that. It's very plot specific. It's very A, B, and C, though told very elegantly. But Empire changes that up completely, and proposes that there's not going to be an amorphous structure to the film, that it's almost a series of vignettes, but those vignettes work. Why? Because there's that emotional through line, the emotional story arc that hangs through both the A and the B storylines. It's very like Rian Johnson took a similar lesson from The Last Jedi, though he does something completely different with The Last Jedi. And that's the reason why it works as well as it does, but he's using it where Kirshner is using it through his own affectation as a filmmaker. Rian Johnson is taking that emotional story arc of A and B and C and is putting it through his own lens as a storyteller. So yeah, I mean, ultimately, it is the second best Star Wars film at this point, or Star Wars content at this point. And that brings us to our number one, which should surprise nobody, which is Star Wars, A New Hope, or Star Wars Episode One, New Hope, whatever you want to call it. I, for the longest time as a kid, it was just Star Wars. It was Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi. So I'm going to call it Star Wars. Why? Because very specifically, this is the 1977 theatrical version that I'm talking about. Not the theatrical, but the home video release. The one that has episode 4 on it, calls it A New Hope, but it's essentially retains all of the sound and initial special effects. Though I have a couple of versions of that. Ultimately, I end up watching the high def version most of the time. Though for this and my rewatch, I have a VHS box set that's window box. It's pan and scan, and that's what I watched for this list. I only felt it was right that I went with the B movie version of it, which is VHS, right? I mean, there's not much that can't be said about Star Wars and why it should be number one. It's the movie that launched all of this content, made hundreds of filmmakers become filmmakers, it took something old and made it new again. You know, it took the serial cliffhanger structure and repurposed it for a film and made something that's breathless, something that makes you use your imagination as much as that's on screen. What I love about the original Star Wars is there's gaps. You know, when Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan Kenobi talks about, you know, the Clone Wars and your father was a great pilot and a trusted friend, there's gaps there. Like, you know, the relationship between Tarkin and Leia, there is a lot there. Vader coming into, a boardroom meeting and choking motherfuckers out and his relationship with Admiral Mahdi. Like, there is so much in here that is inferred and allows you to use your imagination to come up with whatever you want. And I think that's a lot of what's gotten away from Star Wars in general, which is that everything has to be explained now, it feels like. And Star Wars was not like that. And it's still a brilliant, brilliant movie. It still works. It's alchemy. It's lightning in a bottle that you'll never see reproduced again. It's very specific. Like, this kind of alchemy just doesn't happen. I know that people like will try to recreate it, but you just can't. And more importantly, why would you want to? Like, you know, be inspired like Lucas was inspired. I mean, like, that's what I love so much about this. This is the mother of invention. Like, Star Wars ultimately was trying to was trying to solve an issue. Basically, Lucas couldn't make Flash Gordon even though he wanted to. And to solve that issue of wanting to make a kids film, like a cliffhanger serial film, rather than just give up or continue to harp away until he got Flash Gordon, he did his own thing. And that is the lesson that we should learn from Star Wars. I think that as filmmakers, anybody should learn that, not the other lessons that have been learned and obviously over the last 40 plus years have been, like, you know, literally vomited out. Like, we're learning the wrong lessons from Star Wars, or at least Hollywood is, or filmmakers are sometimes, is that they don't understand that it's not about, at least for me, like what I see is that it's not, to me, Star Wars is not about making like something really big and giant. It's taking something that you love and filtering it through your own guise of storytelling. It's filtering it through your own storytelling structure and your own style. Like, that's what Lucas did. Lucas took like the model of Flash Gordon and that kind of sci-fi, that high adventure sci-fi, and repurposed it, rechanneled it into a whole lifetime filter of content consumption. I'm not going to say watching movies, because we all know Lucas is a lot smarter than that. He just didn't watch movies. I mean, there were comic books, novels, you know, historical treatises on storytelling, you know, all of this stuff, all kind of in, you know, factored into his creation of Star Wars. And that's just brilliant. We all still, after 40 years, still pray to the altar of Star Wars. But what I pray to when it comes to Star Wars is the inventiveness of George Lucas circa 1975. The the unwillingness to be defeated by the fact that he wasn't given an IP and just said, fuck it, I'll do it myself. I'll figure something else out. And he did. I mean, that if we take that lesson now in 2017, I don't think that we would be in the position that we're kind of in right now, which is IP heavy, no original content. You know, we're living in an era right now where Fox just got bought out by Disney. What the fuck? But okay, I'm not here to complain or talk about that stuff. We're here to talk about Star Wars. But it's to say, I really do hope that people, when they watch Star Wars, take the right, like, if you're a filmmaker, taking the right lessons from it. And yes, there are right lessons and there are wrong lessons to be taken from Star Wars. And I think as a filmmaker, there's so much that can be taken from this that's so much better than just what's been taken recently, at least what I see has been taken over the last 40 years. And with that, guys, that does it. That's my list. I hope you guys, I hope you guys get a little mad at it. I wouldn't mind you guys getting mad and being upset that I rank certain things lower than other things. And, you know, everybody's expectation of, I always find it funny that it's almost like everybody wants people to be lemmings. They want them to get into formation with all of their lists. Like, you know, if Citizen Kane isn't the top film or Vertigo isn't the top film of your all-time favorites list, then what the fuck is wrong with you? Or if you don't have certain movies in your top 10, then what the fuck is wrong with you? And I like variances. I like hearing people change it up. If you honestly thought that the Star Wars Holiday Special was your number two, or even your number one, if you could give me a reason and it's not bullshit and you're not ironically fucking doing that, and please don't bring irony into this situation. You guys all know how I feel about irony. But if you can unironically tell me, I'll respect you. I definitely will. Like, I never don't, like, everybody has a right to their opinion. At least, in my estimation, that is the way that it works in life. But I always find it funny and ironic that people like get upset when people's lists don't add up to what they were hoping that it would add up to. You can always reach out to us if you do want to talk to us and talk shit about my list, my ranking of all the Star Wars, you can always reach out to me on the B-Movie podcast handle on Twitter and Instagram. That is the letter B, the word movie, the word pod. All together, no lines, no dashes, no bullshit. You can always read my written reviews and content on filmdispenser.com with my colleagues, Scott, and the rest of the crew on Film Dispenser. We're all doing some really great content right now, gearing up for our end of year lists, which you will definitely be seeing an end of year list for the B-Movie podcast and a B-Movie podcast special double-sized edition to talk about our top 10 list. So, but with that, guys, again, as always, I tell you guys how much your listenership means to me, and it really does. You guys make this stuff possible. You guys let me go on to this weird, strange journey into B-Movie Landia with you. Right now, we're, like, in this episode, you know, it's all, it's not in the B-movie realm. It's definitely A-list blockbuster stuff, but, you know, we can always journey into that every once in a while. Rules are made to be broken occasionally, just not constantly. So with that, guys, we will be back next week where we are officially closing out the Star Wars-ish series, and you'll just have to stay tuned to see what that's all about. So until next time, talk to you soon.